This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast here. Matt Larkin with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. A lot of fun stuff to talk about ahead on this podcast, the playoffs. But before we get into that, the book has not closed on the Humboldt tragedy. And as we discussed last week in the podcast, it will never close. Yeah. The wounds will never heal. Ken is back now from his trip to Saskatchewan. So Ken, did you have any final thoughts about the experience that you wanted to share?
Well, I think just that, you know, first of all, you know, like I said, we have fun on the podcast, but right now it doesn't feel like this is a fun thing to talk about. And it's, you know, I think it goes without saying that it's an assignment that I don't ever want to have to cover ever again. You know, but what my biggest takeaway from Humboldt was I drove there full of despair and I left there with some hope, because these people were so strong and so stoic and so resilient and kind. And, you know, I don't know how you handle this, and I don't think anybody knows how you handle it until it happens. But I never heard anybody saying, like, why us? Why me? Why did this happen? You know, they accepted what had happened, as terrible and gruesome as it was, and they were prepared to, you know, to move on. I don't want to say that, but to accept what happened and to make, you know, the best of it. Like I was talking to the parents of one young boy who died. Jacob Lyke died at the age of 19, and I was at his parents' house, and you know, his mother was finding meaning in it. You know, she was finding a higher purpose in it. And I think, if anything, that's my takeaway from all of it, is that there is some hope. You know, they are going to have a team next year. And I told the president of the team, I said, you know, they have no players right now. They have no players, and they have one assistant coach who's a numbers guy, who isn't even an on-ice guy. But I said to the guy, I said, here's what I think is going to happen. I think you're going to say the Humboldt Broncos will be holding open tryouts on this day at this time, and they're going to have a line of people outside the arena wanting to play for that team. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're going to be any good, but they'll have tons of heart and they'll all want to play. Like Jackson Joseph's younger brother said to one of the people in the Humboldt Broncos, he's like 14 or 15. He said, I'm going to come back here and play, you know, in honor of my brother. One of the kids that was an AP, a call up, went up to one of Kevin Gehringer at the funeral and said, look, I'm done midget hockey. I'm going to play for the Broncos. So, you're right, Matt, it's going to take a long time to heal. I don't know if it ever will. I think it will. There will be scars, but they will heal. But for me, I think the biggest takeaway is that Humboldt is gonna get beyond this, and I don't think they're gonna let it define them. It's gonna define them for a while. It's gonna define them for a long time. But there's a lot to those people, and there's a lot of good there. So I think that you know, I'm praying for Humboldt, and I hope other people, if you're so inclined to do so, are doing that. And I wish them nothing but the best.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks so much for your hard work on this. And to everyone affected by the tragedy, just know that you're still in our hearts and you always will be. We will not forget you.
Well said.
So now let's move on to the fun stuff, the playoffs. I mean, playoffs are always fun. They're always chaotic. And as we're starting to see, you can't predict seemingly anything in the playoffs. I mean, as an example, some people pick Vegas to beat the Kings, sure, but no one picked the Kings to be on the brink of being swept. We can start with them, but I want to talk about all the teams that are trailing and what you guys think about their chances. So maybe we will start with the Kings, who are down 0-3. They have 11 players who are on the 2014 team that came back from 0-3. But is that meaningful, or is that kind of circumstantial in your mind? I guess would be the first question I have.
Oh, I think it's meaningful. I think it means something, because they can sit there I think they play tonight, right? They can sit there before the game tonight and say, guys, we've been through this before. And I have to admit, I was one of those people that picked Los Angeles. If there was going to be an upset in the first round, I thought that it would be Los Angeles over Vegas, just because of the experience factor and the fact that they're playoff hardened. But the thing that I find so amazing is that it looks like they're the other way around. Vegas is playing like the experienced team with all the poise, and LA is looking for answers. And they just can't seem to, they have no answer for Vegas's speed. And they have no answer for Vegas's puck possession. They're gaining the zone every single time. And to me, guys, I mean, I wrote this yesterday, and Lord knows I've gotten a lot of flack on Twitter about it, but I think that Drew Doughty, I mean, he's played okay, but like, stop with the antics, play hockey, you know? Like, I mean, it looks like he's trying to drive them to distraction, but it's completely backfiring and he's being driven to distraction. And obviously they got to score. They can't get one goal a game and hope to win anything. So,
yeah, it's interesting because I was the same way where I thought the Kings would win this series. But if you had told me that there was a bunch of low scoring games defining the beginning of this, I would have assumed that was great for the Kings. Mm-hmm. But Vegas, I mean, with Marc-Andre Fleury and net, here's a guy that's got cup rings, and you know, Pittsburgh does not win last year if Fleury can't fill in for Matt Murray when he got injured right in warmups. Right. So it's not like he's a relic. He has very relevant Stanley Cup experience. He's not going to get rattled. So you're on almost an even keel with Jonathan Quick, who I think is one of the best goaltenders ever. But I think Fleury is not that far behind when you look at it on a historical line. You're right about the speed, Ken. I think that's something that has been very interesting in this postseason so far, is that we're not seeing, for the most part, teams gooning it up too much. I know what we're going to talk about, some specific incidences.
The Ducks are failing at
gooning it up.
Miserably.
Yeah, but if you look at Boston and Toronto, game three, I think there was like 2-3 penalties the entire game, maybe?
There was 4 last night. That was
4,
it.
Yeah. And none of them
were of the...
Like, they were egregious.
They were just kind of like hooking and stuff.
Yeah,
like
one was
like,
a puck over the glass penalty that... You know,
albeit a puck that actually hit the glass,
hit
the boards before it went over.
Yeah exactly. So it shouldn't have even been a penalty.
Yeah. So we're gonna have a review for an offside where the guy's DNA might have been over the line.
Yeah.
But no review for this.
Yeah exactly. But I think what we're seeing is fast teams are being allowed to be fast, and obviously for Vegas, that's a huge advantage for them. And that was, for me, that was an X factor going in, is would the Golden Knights be allowed to be the Golden Knights? And so far they have, and that is obviously to the detriment of the Los Angeles Kings.
And the funny thing about Vegas is, it's funny how quickly people just kind of forgot the regular season. It's like, okay, they start quickly in October, okay, it's a cute story, it's a fluke. Then they win the division and have a phenomenal season, amazingly well coached, playing with such constant, relentless speed.
Yeah.
But a lot of the prognosticators, the playoffs start, and it's like, oh, wait, no, never mind. That was a fluke. The Kings are going to beat them. But no, Vegas is just doing what it did well all year in an 82-game sample size.
And it's also something that just occurred to me. It's not like an expansion team where it's like, oh, this is just a bunch of, like, random guys who've never had success. They were picking one player per team. So, guys who were in the Stanley Cup final last year. You got guys that were in the conference final last year. Like, they have plenty of postseason experience. It just happens not to be with each other until now.
But I also think the something to prove and wanting to prove people wrong and that motivation, I think that's part of what's driving this as well.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I picked Vegas, because I personally said, I love that they're playing LA, because then they get to be the underdog again. And the underdog story has worked amazingly well.
Nice.
Right? They love having their backs against the wall. And obviously the Kings' defense has been depleted. Jake Muzzin, Derek Forbort, Drew Doughty missed a game, of course, with a suspension. And for the record, a lot of the heat I've seen Ken taking on Twitter, people either didn't read your article or don't understand it. They seem to think that you are criticizing Doughty's comments to the media.
Yeah.
You're talking about his stuff on the ice.
Yeah, no. Don't ever think that, go on a supposition that the person's actually read it.
Right.
I mean, maybe they read part of the headline. That's about as far as it gets a lot of times.
Well, some guy told me my article was terrible yesterday, and as I started talking to him, I realized, you didn't read it.
I didn't read it either, but it was probably terrible.
We saw a lot of pushback on Tuesday night, or Monday night, rather, from several teams that were down 2-0. So they got back to their home
ice. The night of the not-so-dead.
That's right. The Devils, the Avalanche, all came out really fired up and played with a lot of speed. And they all brought their series back two games to one. So do you believe that all three of these teams are really back in their series? Or maybe some are, some aren't? Or is it just a matter of, okay, you're going to get a temporary lift on home ice, but things are going to swing back the other way? Where do you guys fall on that?
I don't think any one of those teams is going to win their series. I don't think Toronto is going to win the series. I think if I'm the Boston Bruins waking up this morning, I still feel pretty good about my game and where it's at. I mean, they outshot them 42-30. They, you know, if not for some bad puck luck and some ridiculous acrobatic goaltending by Freddie Anderson, Boston wins that game. New Jersey, I mean, you got to think they're going to get a bump on home ice and they're going to win a game or two on home ice. But ultimately, I mean, I just don't think when Tampa's playing their best, they can even come close to matching up with them. And Nashville, I mean, that one to me is a little bit like, maybe, but I'm not so sure. I you know what I found with Nashville is that I think fast teams can crack the code
a little bit with
Nashville.
The Leafs embarrassed them.
Yeah. And I think as long as Colorado, you know, uses its speed, it will stay in this series and it'll make it close. But Nashville's just so imposing, so big, so strong. You know, they've got so many weapons. I still think they're going to emerge, but down the line, I mean, you talked about the speed factor. I think if teams can use their speed against the Nashville Predators, I'm not saying they'll beat them, but I think they'll give them a good series. And I think Colorado will do that. But ultimately, I don't think any of those teams are going to win their series.
Yeah. And to jump off that point about Nashville, the two teams in the West that gave them problems this year were Winnipeg and Vegas. Winnipeg, obviously, very skilled, very well-rounded, and big. Vegas, obviously, very fast.
Right.
I would agree. With Toronto, I think they would have the best shot of those three teams at coming back because now they have a blueprint of how to win. But at the same time, they need to acknowledge that they did not play a perfect game in Game 3. They did get pretty lucky in some regards. But at least now they know that if they play fast, skilled Toronto hockey, that the Bruins are going to have some problems with them. But the thing that makes me think that Boston's going to be fine is I was in their dressing room last night. All the stars came out. Marchand, Bergeron, Chara, Pasternak, Rask. You couldn't tell that they lost. They were completely even keel. You know, if you just walked in and talked to them, you would have had no idea which way the game had gone that night. And to me, that says, we're fine. We're fine. And Bruce Cassidy said it in his post-game press conference as well that, you know, even on the Austin Matthews goal, they were maybe a foot away from checking him. And that amazing shot that Matthews had wouldn't have even been taken. So,
and the guy's got to bust out at some point in this series.
Yeah.
He did nothing in games 1 and 2.
Yeah, and now that gives Toronto hope, too, is now you've got Austin Matthews at, you know, peak engagement, and you get him. Well, you don't even have to get him away from Bergeron because he was on the ice at the time of the goal. But I think that Boston seems pretty confident right now that if they continue to play the way they have been, they'll be fine in the series.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, I mean, I still have the Bruins winning the series. I had them winning in seven. But I do agree that of the trailing teams, the Leafs have the best shot. For one, they were just, they're the best team of the teams that were trailing, like in points in the standings. Mm-hmm. But the way you guys described that game, it's like they got outshot and Anderson played great. Yeah, that's the Leafs blueprint. That's
the Leafs. They win.
The Leafs are a Michael Bay movie. They're crazy, wild, explosive, flawed, stupid.
Yeah.
Or a fast sports car that's out of control and tough to handle, right? And I think in Game 3, the Leafs finally remember who they were. And they're not an elite defensive team. They're probably not even an average defensive team. And their style is to use their speed, their youth, their ceaseless energy, and they will give up a lot of chances. They have to just accept, we're not a great defensive team. Mm-hmm. And they're going to generate a lot of chances. And last, I think the Game 3 was kind of their season in a nutshell, where they got goals on stretch passes and in transition.
Yeah.
And Anderson had to weather the storm. But, I mean, as you guys have probably learned as well, interviewing lots of goalies over your careers, most goalies play better with more shots. Anderson got peppered in the second half of that game, and he got into a rhythm. He was fighting the puck all series.
Yeah.
So it sounds strange to sort of look at it through rose-colored glasses. Oh, the Leafs are getting territorially dominated. Now they're going to come back. But that's sort of... it's what's worked for them.
That's sort of what they are.
Yeah. Right, and in games one and two, they were getting caught in the Bruins' down-low cycle game, and they were trying to do what the Bruins do, and they're not going to beat the Bruins.
Well, and to me, like they also got caught up, I think, in the first two games. They got obsessed with matching, with matching up. And, I mean, the match is a lot easier when you're on home ice, obviously. But I didn't get the sense that they were as obsessed last night with matching up with the Bruins. I mean, the Plekanec line was out there against Bergeron most of the time. And there was actually one play in the first period where Tyler Bozak took the faceoff, won it, and then he raced back to the bench and Plekanec came on, and it was a terrible change, and it led to a really good scoring chance. So I think the less they worry about that stuff, and as you say, just balls to the wall, you know, play to your identity, don't try to be the other team. And that's really all you can hope for.
Yeah, it's instead of saying, oh my God, they're the best line in hockey. Yeah, that's right. They're the best line in hockey. You are not going to stop them. Not let them score, but except they are going to beat you a couple times.
Yeah.
But then just use your speed and you'll get a few back. Another team I'm curious about, I'm very curious where you guys land on this one, is Washington. Losing both games at home, but the Capitals lost both games in overtime. They were leading game two by three goals before, I think, Columbus got a couple power plays.
Game
back in that.
One by two goals,
right.
And game two by two goals.
And the ultimate equalizer in the series so far has been Philip Grubauer's bad goaltending. Now Braden Holtby's coming back in, and Holtby coming in relief is very different from if he was starting to begin the series, because the pressure is not on Holtby. It's like being a backup quarterback in football. You're coming in as a savior, so you have nothing to lose, which I think is a big mental edge for Holtby now. Do you think it's possible the Caps can get back into this one, especially with Holtby in the lineup?
I think they can get back into it. I don't think they're going to win it. I think this is too little too late. And I think Barry Trotz is going to lose his job because of it. Mm. I think the decision to start Philip Grubauer in game one was dubious.
Yeah.
I think the decision to start Philip Grubauer in game two was brutal. I don't care if Braden Holtby had an up and down season. He's the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
He's Braden Holtby.
Yeah,
he's
the guy.
Number two all time.
Like, nobody's going to second guess you if you start Braden Holtby in the playoffs and he poops the bed and you're done.
Yeah.
And, you know, this one ain't on Ovi.
Nope.
He had 10 shots last game. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that Washington might have a chance, but I think it's too little, too late. I don't think they can, I don't think they can win three games in Columbus. Like, that's a tall order to win three games in Columbus. And like I said, I think it's too little, too late. I think Washington's going to spectacularly disappoint again, and this time it's going to cost Barry Trotz his job.
Mm. And I actually blogged about this the other day, that, you know, Braden Holtby, if they're going to get back into the series, it's going to be because of him. And it's interesting because, you know, he came in at the end of game two. He gave up the overtime goal, but not his fault whatsoever. I mean, Jakub Jarabek completely blew his assignment.
Oh,
like,
my
if,
God.
If you can't, like,
if you can't,
slow
if
down
you can't stop
Matt
Calvert in front when he's only got one hand on his stick.
Yeah. Like, Matt Calvert is basically my size. Like, he weighs a little bit more than I do, but I am also not an elite athlete. And
oh, don't sell yourself short. You're tremendously not an elite athlete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm a tremendous slouch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't even help out your goalie to do that, like, why are you even there? And, I mean, I know the answer is because, like, Washington was in a bad cap situation and, you know, they don't have enough defensemen.
That's what happens when you start Jakub Jurávek on purpose in a playoff game.
Yeah, exactly. You get what you pay for. I do think that Holtby can steal a game for them, maybe even two, but I agree with Ken. At this point, like, Columbus is a good team. You know, like, I don't think they're good enough to, like, go all the way or anything like that. But they can take a series. And we have to remember, too, for all the motivation Washington has to prove people wrong, Columbus has never won a series in franchise history.
Right.
This is a golden opportunity for the Blue Jackets to make some history of their own. And when you look at the talent they have at their disposal, you got Bobrovsky in net, you got Seth Jones and Zach Werenski on the back end, you have a nice complement of forwards who clearly have been able to find the net so far. It just seems like, yeah, Washington blew it again.
Yep.
And it's interesting, too, because we talked before...
Wait,
that's right. We talked about the Tom Wilson factor, but I personally, I mean, I picked Columbus to win the series because I didn't think Wilson was going to be a factor because Columbus, they don't have a Tom Wilson, but they have a lot of almost Tom Wilson.
They got Boone Jenner.
They have Boone Jenner, Nick Foligno. Yeah. They have guys that can play heavy.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't think they're the type of team that's going to be intimidated by one tough guy.
Yeah.
Right? But I still wonder about the goaltending. I mean, Bobrovsky going into the playoffs had the second worst playoff save percentage in the league of any active player, I think, with more than 10 playoff games. So I'm curious if that's going to come back now that he's back at home. More pressure, I don't know. And Holtby, on the other hand, number two all-time in playoff save percentage. So, and even territorially, I mean, the Caps were the shots 58-30 or something in game two.
Oh, they killed him.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
It's been close. So I'm wondering if the pendulum's going to swing back the other way. I'm not ready to write Washington off yet. So I don't know. Out of all the teams trailing, I think Washington would be the one that would surprise me least with a comeback.
Yeah.
But the team that pushed back hardest in its game three with the most decisive win was Minnesota, dropping a sixth spot on the Jets and chasing Connor Hellebuck. What message did that send to you guys? And are you believing that the Wild are back in this for real?
I think they're back in it for real, yeah. I think they dug themselves too deep. And
You gotta speak up.
Bruce Boudreau.
I think
this will be a long series. I think it'll be a difficult series. It's probably gonna go at least six. But I just think Winnipeg is with the exception of game three, is just a well oiled machine. And I think Dustin Byfuglien is, you know, I mean, with the exception of game three, he's just taking over this series. And I don't see Minnesota having enough to do it. But, I think Winnipeg's safe.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm a little worried about Tyler Myers leaving the game and what his short-term future is health-wise. But, again, you know, there's no Ryan Suter. You're already playing a Winnipeg team that is stacked, and you put that over the span of a couple of games. Game three might have just been a bit of a smack in the face for the Jets that teams need sometimes, particularly when expectations are high. So, you know, first two games go pretty well for you, and you think, this will be a cakewalk. Well, it's like, well, no, it's still the Stanley Cup playoffs. You still got to play the full 60, and you still got to, you know, make your assignments and make the stops. And I think Winnipeg's fine. And in the long term, this might even help them that they had a bit of adversity to go through.
Yeah, and two, I mean, like, even if you picked Winnipeg to win and someone said, well, after three games, it would be 2-1 Winnipeg, you'd be like, yeah, it sounds well.
I had Winnipeg sweeping, damn it. I really wanted that for my ego.
Yeah, I had them in five, so I'm still alive.
There you go. I do wonder, I mean, Minnesota and Winnipeg are two of the teams that, it feels like they're two of the teams that have the strongest lift on their home ice, like that their environment is really raucous.
And Vegas.
Yeah.
And Vegas.
Yeah.
So I wonder now, I'm like, is this going to be one of those series that just goes home, and it's going to be 2-2, and then Winnipeg's going to win game 5, Minnesota's going to win game 6, and Winnipeg's going to win game 7? I don't know. But I do wonder about that, because it definitely seemed like Minnesota got a monster lift, like extra adrenaline in game 3.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess we can all agree that the Ducks are
toast.
Well, they've only they've only been outscored 14-3.
That's true.
They've only been outscored 14-3.
If this was football, that's not bad.
And they only gave up four power play goals last night.
That's not bad.
You know, I mean, if you're an optimist, I mean, it's gonna get better.
Sure,
it's gonna get better.
Yeah, maybe they.
Wow, why even make the playoffs? Yes. Why even bother?
Yeah, I feel like Anaheim. I'm glad I changed my pick on this because when we were doing our prognostications originally, I had Anaheim, and then I looked at the injuries and I was like, eh.
Yeah.
But you look at San Jose, and it just seems like at least for this series, they've got the legs. And that's always been my worry with the Ducks is that as good as players like Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry and Ryan Kesler are, like, those are veteran guys who have played a lot of
hard miles and miles
of bad road.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the Sharks, sure, they have veterans, but then you plunk in a guy like Evander Kane who has all the motivation in the world, his first playoffs, to just rip the roof off and he has.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big thing where, you know, like, you can grind for 82 games and you can get yourself home ice advantage, but if you're an older team, it comes with a price, and I think that's what we're seeing with Anaheim.
It's true, and at the beginning of the year, I did a big Ryan Getzlaff interview, and I mentioned this to Getzlaff and to Randy Carlisle. I said, you know, your defense is young, but your forward core, I mean, your go-to guys are in your 30s, so do you feel like this is a final window for this kind of generation? And they said yes. They admitted, yes, we know we're in our window the next couple of years. And Randy Carlisle told me that's why he came back. He came back specifically to do a short-term job, knowing that this is a final shot before Perry and Getzlaff age out. And I'm worried that we're starting to see that happen.
Well, we saw it all year, though.
Yeah.
With Perry, this is nothing new.
Yeah, nothing new. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, and Kessler's is bionic man now. He's broken down at multiple surgeries.
Yeah, yeah.
But what the problem is, the Ducks always had the young mobile defense to fall back on, and that was their future, and it still is their future. But when Cam Fowler's hurt,
that's huge,
and Shea Theodore is now playing for Vegas, and Sammy Vatanen's now playing for New Jersey, suddenly you don't have that safety net anymore, and you're playing Francois Beauchemin, Kevin Bieksa for one game, and I can't even Andy Walensky.
And
Marcus Pettersson. They're very depleted, and I feel like, I mean, we know, like, what do we associate Randy Carlisle with? Other than not knowing how to use toasters, the 2007 Ducks that had the most fights in the league, and they played a heavy style. And it's kind of like we're seeing in this series how many penalties have the Ducks taken? They're trying to goad San Jose into a dirty trench warfare.
They're trying to drag them into
and it's not working.
The ditch.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
San Jose's not going.
Yeah, they're stuck in the wrong decade.
Yeah,
I think. And I do believe that for that reason we're going to see Randy Carlisle handed his pink slip in the offseason.
Yeah, I think too. I mean, San Jose had a sneaky good season this year.
It's true.
Like a really sneaky good season. And now they're having a really, well, maybe not so sneaky good playoff because, they've just been dominant.
That's fair. And lastly, we've got the Flyers. I mean, that series, I guess every game's going to be a blowout.
Yeah, they just take turns blowing each other out.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I mean, I know the Flyers struck back nicely in game two, but I mean, goaltending alone. I mean, like Brian Elliott, he has a horrible game one. He looks pretty good in game two. Then game three, he does his Brian Elliott thing again.
Yeah.
In the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just against the Crosbys of the world, I can't see. Yes, I know. It seems like it could be following a back and forth pattern, but I still think the Penguins are going to win this in five or six.
Oh yeah. I think it's a great strategy though. Like, if you're down 2-0 in the first period, it's almost like, oh, well, we're done. So let's save it for next game and, you know, whatever, lose 8-1. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I said before the playoffs that, once again, goaltending would be the Flyers' undoing again. And I guess they're just going to have to wait.
Pretty much. Yeah, because it's not going to be next year.
No, it's not going to be next year.
Unless they get somebody via trade or free agency.
But I mean, Carter Hart is going to need a year in the minors, at least.
At least.
And but he's been ridiculous this year.
Yep.
He's
amazing.
Been ridiculous in the WHL playoffs.
Yep.
When he got sent back, he had a meeting with Ron Hextall, and Ron Hextall said, go and be the best player in junior hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very good chance that he did that.
Yep.
So I guess they're just going to have to wait.
That's essentially it. And it's tough if you're like Claude Giroux or one of the older Flyers where it's like, you guys aren't actually going to be good for at least two or three more years. But yeah, pending a short-term solution, I don't know what you do.
Is there any way, I mean, I feel like it's something we don't really see in this generation. We saw it, you know, with Luongo when he was younger and Marc-Andre Fleury, where goalies only a couple years, you know, 1 to 2 years after being drafted are getting their shot in the pros. Is Carter Hart so good that is there any chance if he wows at rookie camp, he gets fast-tracked?
I hope not.
I don't think so.
I hope not. I hope not for his sake. I hope not for the Flyers' sake.
I mean, Ron Hextall's very conservative.
The progression is he's got to play 65 games in Lehigh Valley next year.
Yeah.
You know, and they usually have pretty good teams, and so he'll have some success and, mm-hmm. you know, a decent Calder Cup run, and then maybe he's ready. But who knows? I mean, you know, Tom Barrasso came out of high school and won the Vezina and Calder.
But almost 30 years or more than 30 years.
Oh, yeah. I know. But my point is it can be done, but I don't think it will or it should. And I think the other thing about this series is that we have to mention is the Sid Crosby factor. Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked to him before the playoffs. Like, he was good this season and he was really good towards the end, but he didn't have like a dominant sort of Sidney Crosby season.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about it and he was like, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not riding off into the night here, okay?
Yeah.
I'm still pretty good, and I still want to be in that conversation of the best players in the world, and I think he's proving it right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny. Like, you go to the playoffs, and you think about the players that are perfect for these situations, and it's the Crosbys, the Patrice Bergerons, guys like that where...
They were born for it.
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things where when you look at Bergeron's game, and the same can be said for Marc-Edouard Vlasic in San Jose on defense, where it's like, why are they so good? It's like, well, they take away time and space. It's like, how come everybody doesn't do that? It's like, well, because these guys do it on another level. Like,
right.
They're so smart, they're so positionally sound that, like, that's why they're the best at it. And same with Crosby, where it's like, well, why is he the best? It's like, because he does everything right.
Right.
You know? And when he has opportunities... Even when they're like, when it's like batting a puck out of midair, he's put in so much work that he knows exactly what's going to happen, or at least he can put himself in a position where good things will happen. And he has so much experience at a high level now that it's practically muscle memory that he's going to make something positive happen when he's on the ice.
And it's a Steve Yzerman thing, I think, too.
Sure.
He's reinvented himself in a lot of ways. And I think what we're going to see from Sidney Crosby from now on is, you know, okay regular, like by his standards, okay, like really good regular seasons, but not, you know, I could see him falling out of top 10 scoring.
Sure.
I could see it happening.
It'll happen eventually.
But he's going to still be a really good two-way player. And as I said, he's born for those moments. He was put on this earth to score the overtime winner in the Olympics. He was born for those moments, and I think he's still going to do that.
And I don't think those baseball swing batting pucks out of the air, we can't call them flukes anymore because they happen so often. Because
he's done it 15 times.
Because he's so measured, he's so studied, he practices every little behavior, takes nothing for granted, never stops trying to get better. So I'm with you guys. It's been, I mean... Especially in, it seems like in all the game ones or game twos, but it's been on and off a chippy playoffs, a lot of headshots. You know, Nazem Kadri, 3-game suspension, Drew Doughty suspended. There have been some other plays that people wanted suspensions for, Corey Perry, some Tom Wilson hits. How do you guys grade the Department of Player Safety so far? Do you think they're getting these calls right, or are you part of the mob who feels they're inconsistent?
I wouldn't call it a mob, but I think it's fair to say it's inconsistent. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very pleasantly surprised by the two suspensions that they gave out. The Kadri one in particular, I never thought that they would give, because essentially prevailing thought is that one game in the playoffs is equal to 2 games in the regular season. So that's the equivalent of a 6-game suspension. Which is pretty steep. Mm-hmm. So I liked it. There's stuff that I seen that I don't like. So I guess I've got the same opinion of NHL player safety that I've always had. I like some of the stuff they're doing, but sometimes it just feels like the wheel of justice. And you know, I see Anze Kopitar get butt ended right in the face, and we all saw it. And I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard a thing. And they play tonight, so I'm assuming nothing is going to come of that. So I think it's inconsistent. I think it's better, but I still think it's inconsistent.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty good so far, and I think, you know, with those two suspensions, you know, you get Nazem Kadri, who's a pretty prominent player on the Leafs, not a star, but pretty prominent, and you get Drew Doughty, who's obviously an all-world defenseman. So they're clearly not worried about which players they're suspending, and, you know, with it being three games for Kadri, you know, essentially at the time they were saying you might not play again this year. Mm-hmm. If Boston sweeps, right, your season's
over.
You're
done. Yeah.
And we're willing to do that because we think what you did was so egregious that it would be punished as thusly. I think it was good for them to send a message early on in the playoffs saying that we will be suspending people. And I think the next incident is probably the tipping point. So if somebody does something and they get another couple of games, I think that'll really set the tone for the rest of the playoffs. Whereas if things slide in the next couple of games, then maybe players say, like, okay, well, we could probably get away with being over the line a bit. And that's when things will kind of skid. So they're on the right path. For me, it's just a matter of making sure that they have the players on alert, that they're still going to be calling things.
Right. And I'm kind of... I don't think they're perfect. They're always going to miss certain calls, but I don't think they're as inconsistent as the average fan believes. And I think to understand that, you just got to brush up on your rule book. And I think a lot of people forget that the decisions that the player safety department has to make, it's bound by the collective bargaining agreement and the rule book, which is part of the CBA. Mm-hmm. And you can only enforce what's in the rule book. So right, the perfect example I'll give you is, it's funny, that's cocky, the perfect example. an example I'll give you, the Corey Perry hit on Melker Carlson, okay? Once you look and you realize that Melker Carlson's stick is on the puck, we know it's not interference, it's not a late hit. Is it a blindside hit? Yes, but you know what's not in the rule book? Blindsides. Mm-hmm. Blindsides are not suspendable, right, per se, if it's not in the rule book. And the best example I can think of is, I've probably said it before, but Matt Cook in 2010, when he hit Mark Savard, when Rule 48
wasn't
amended
yet,
they couldn't suspend at the time unless someone adds a penalty called blindsiding to the rule book, right? So we can sort of say, you know what, I don't like the hit, but can you enforce something that's not in the rule book? I don't know if you can. Before we finish up here, we'll get to at least one reader question. This one's from Philippe Gostin. And Philippe asks, is Mike Babcock overrated? That's a juicy question.
Ooh.
Well, he's a damn good coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
He's a damn good coach. Is he overrated? You could make that case. One cup. One Stanley Cup with those Detroit teams. You know. And a couple of gold medals with 23 guys who are all going to be in the Hall of Fame, you know. And as I said, I thought he outcoached himself in games one and two. I think overrated. That's a pretty loaded word.
It is, yeah.
Right. You know, he's the highest paid coach with the longest term contract. He makes 6.25. Is he the best coach in the NHL? Arguable. Is he overrated? Arguable, for sure.
Mm. I will say this. One Stanley Cup, fair enough, but he's literally won gold in every other event internationally. World Juniors, World Cup of Hockey, two Olympics. And you're right, great rosters, yeah, but other coaches had amazing rosters and couldn't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
You look at some of the luminary head coaches around, Pat Quinn never won a Stanley Cup as a coach.
That's right.
There's not many people that can hang with Mike Babcock when it comes to resume. And you can say, well, he had great players, but it becomes sort of a chicken and the egg thing. It's like, well, who can handle all those players and put them in the right,
right,
spots to succeed?
Right.
I think if you're talking about the best coaches in the NHL right now, like, who's in that category? Babcock, obviously. Joel Quenneville has had tremendous success.
Yeah.
Obviously, Chicago's going through problems right now.
Yeah, but he's still, like, if he were on the market,
exactly,
two
right,
seconds.
Yeah. If all coaches became free agents in the summer, who gets hired first?
Yeah.
I think that's the question you have to ask yourself.
And you could say it's him. You could definitely say it's him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I think if Babcock, by the end of his career, hasn't won another cup, then yeah, we'll be able to call him overrated. But I still think it's early to assign him a long-term label. He also got a not overly talented number 7 seed Ducks team to game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final in 2003.
Right.
What I would say about Babcock is I wouldn't necessarily call him overrated, but I would say he sometimes gets in his own way because he's got a pretty big ego. And I think he's stubborn.
Yep.
And I think sometimes he makes personnel decisions because it's his way or the hard way. And even if he knows that there's pressure from media or fans...
He won't listen to that.
Yeah, I almost wonder, like, again, I can't prove this, but I almost wonder, it's like, did he wait longer to put Travis Dermott into the lineup or Kasperi Kapanen just out of spite? Because he didn't want to admit that he was wrong to play Matt Martin or you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. But I do think that... The head is pretty big. That's the best way I can describe it. But
it should be because he's
got some swagger.
He's brilliant.
That's the type of personality.
But I mean, it's so hard. I mean, like Ken Hitchcock only has one Stanley Cup too, right?
Yeah.
And he's gonna be in the Hall of Fame in a couple of years. So yeah, I think it's a debating point. I don't think if you threw that out there that you would be like, oh, that's outrageous. You know.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, if by the time you listen to this podcast, the Leafs are eliminated, then, oh man, Mike Babcock is overrated. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.